Good morning, everyone, and welcome the few of us that are here when some of these programs go on in the morning here in Finland. Our attendance is less, and of course, there is the subject itself, which is a daunting subject and requires a lot of use of the imagination and the realization that there has to be some kind of apprehension of things even beyond the imagination, if that is possible, and what would that be? So I just want to say hi to the to those of you who are here, and that would be Cindy and Frederick, Karen, Leslie, Martine, Miro, Roz, and Vera. Yeah, and with Michael working, oh, and Catherine too, hi. Michael working to keep all this straight. This is program number 26. Well, I am, as you probably know, beginning all these programs with great invocation number two. It seems that no matter what the law requires, there's a certain sixth ray, if I can call it, diehard attitude on the part of a number of people, including the present occupant of the White House. There is somehow a quixotic faith that this whole process can be overturned, this election process, even if it means compromising democracy dramatically and throwing out or disenfranchising millions of voters. To these people, that does not seem too high a price to pay to the advantage compared to the advantage of simply winning, we might say. And this winning would be done on behalf of the lower ego, which is representing the dweller on the threshold. So the battle goes on, and even after this eclipse that's coming up in just 4 days, really. Is that correct? Yeah. The eclipse is coming up in 4 days, and the electors will have all cast and sealed their votes, and by law, the indigo energies should be installed as president, although there are several other votes that have to, well, at least one more major vote that has to come up on January the 6th. These people will continue to try to wear down the lawful opposition. And I don't think that anybody who is a student of the government, a student of the social and governmental process of the United States, has seen anything like it. And of course, it is a threat to the world, given the fact that there are, we might call them strong men, who simply want to take over and exhibit dictatorial powers and have no respect for that form of government, which is hierarchical. It is democracy. And so thus we continue every day with our vigil at night, 8 p.m. GMT during the weekdays, and 10 p.m. GMT during the weekends. So let us simply, you know, we know enough now, and we see how it's going, and we understand the amazing situation that we're in addition to an unacceptable surging of the COVID-19 due to neglect, extreme neglect, and due to the fact that winning in the lower egotistical sense is considered of vastly more important than saving thousands of lives. Unbelievable situation, but that's what you can expect when the lodge of materialism enters in on an attack. And that's what this is. This is a subtle attack, psychological in nature, largely, behind the scenes by those forces that have not given up on the project of bringing humanity down. So we know why we persist in our esoteric work, asserting the will to good, as much of it as we can, asserting goodwill, and acting as members of the new group of world servers. So great invocation number two. Let the lords of liberation issue forth. Let them bring succor to the sons of men. Let the rider from the secret place come forth, and coming save. Come forth, O mighty one. Let the souls of men awaken to the light, and may they stand with massed intent. Let the fiat of the Lord go forth. The end of woe has come. Come forth, O mighty one. The hour of service of the saving force has now arrived. Let it be spread abroad, O mighty one. Let light and love and power and death fulfill the purpose of the coming one. The will to save is here. The love to carry forth the work is widely spread abroad. The active aid of all who know the truth is also here. Come forth, O mighty one, and blend these three. Construct a great defending wall. The rule of evil now must end. You know, when we call here for light, love, and power, that's customary. But you also must wonder how much of death that's being dealt out now with this out-of-control global pandemic, out-of-control in certain places anyway, How much of that is part of the plan to bring human beings closer to each other and to realize that they have to work together to solve a problem which could eliminate millions upon millions if not properly dealt with. I'm remembering the Tibetan saying, the masters knew what would happen, but they were not in a position to discuss it. They are not allowed to discuss it. So I think the death factor here, as it occurred in the Great War of 1914 to 1945, and then later, and now again, is part of the process. But of course, the death means something additional. It means the death of the old thought forms and strictures which hold humanity in prison. A bit like formula number 6 in discipleship in the New Age. There, death is far more than the death of any human form or collection of human forms. It is the death of a whole civilization. And we have to remember, in this case, where the pandemic is most out of control, surprisingly, I suppose, the United States, it is the inheritor of the Piscean sixth ray civilization. And so you would expect a kind of pralaya to occur within its confines. The center, we are told, of the ancient Atlantean continent. That's always surprising to me, but there it is. The ancient Atlantean continent and the United States equivalent, and at least the central point within it. All right. Now, of course, we enter a subject which is very different. We've been paying a lot of attention already, and we'll continue to do so, to the practicalities which exist in the world of the Mahamaya, the normal life, the normal universe. But every once in a while, we have to go deeper. And we may or may not feel inclined to do so when outer circumstances begin to press us in ways that are really drastic. We may say, well, what have we to do with all of this philosophy and the underlying causes of things? And even the purity of being itself. Why are we concerned with our identity? And it is a question, you know. Why be concerned with our identity? And I guess I would have to say that it is mistakes, severe perceptual mistakes concerning what we are, what our identity is, which is causing so much of the frictional, warlike difficulty in the world. We just seem to think that we are the dweller on the threshold. We seem to think we are the personality. And it's only very partially true. And yet the great majority of human beings are stuck in that perception. It's a natural perception, I suppose, and has to do with a great forgetfulness which occurred during the Atlantean period. It seems that things got so bad, so glamorous, that we lost our contact with the higher points of tension, which reveal to us what we really are. And I don't know, maybe it's acceptable for many people to live their incarnation not knowing in any fundamental sense who or what they really are. Maybe, you know, for many that is acceptable. But for some people, it is not acceptable. And I assume that those who have the courage to keep coming back in dealing with these abstract subjects, for such people, it is not acceptable. So, in a way, this whole course, if you can call it that, or these programs, are a great search for real identity. And it's not what we usually think it is. Our estimations are so narrow and so conditioned by time and space, which are great illusions, ultimately, which have to be banished. We can go through our whole life, and probably have many times, and who knows, maybe will, not knowing the truth of these matters. And I think that would be unfortunate if a person has come to the point where, after all, they can, they have the capacity to understand to a certain extent anyway. But that, you know, that capacity is not yet everyone's capacity. Not yet. And so we will just be patient, and but maybe not too patient with ourselves, because we cannot go forever in that state of ignorance. All right, I'd like to, maybe this is a little bit of a review. It's a different view of what matter is, and when we think about what matter is, we're liable to discover what we are and are not. So this is a sort of a psychological approach to the nature of the universe, or maybe I should call it a psycho-spiritual approach. In other words, we're dealing with perception and with self-perception. So I'm saying that matter is, and now we'll, you know, sort of get into the meditative mode and that we've been using here, and kind of just think through these ideas slowly. If we rush the attempted understanding, I don't think we get anywhere. So it's a sort of a slow meditative pondering. So I'm saying that matter is a certain limited mode of self-perception. And when I use that capital S, I generally mean the self within a universe. I don't mean the super universal self or supra universal self, though ultimately they are the same. Ultimately, if self by itself is turned into an object of perception, then matter is created. So matter itself turns out to be a self-perception of a great deity that we call the Universal Logos. That deity merely being a finite extension or objectification of this transcendental deity above and beyond the universe. Now, some people say, how can you talk about anything above and beyond the universe? I guess it depends on how we define that term. The universe is a finitude because it occurs regularly with the rhythm of something we call the great breath. So we have a situation in which there is a universe, the outbreathing, and the prolific inhaling of all that has gone forth, and that is no universe per se, which does not mean that suddenly there is nothing. There is something, but it is beyond finiteness. It is beyond finitude. It is beyond objectification. It's beyond the extension of the ray of the absolute into a limited condition. It's just beyond. And of course, we are in no position to really witness that at this time. As a matter of fact, I think my estimation is that no in-universe being can register that which transcends the finitude we call a universe. And that has to do even with the greatest of beings in our universe, from my perspective. So the Great Spirit, you know, it's a name that is associated with Native American understanding, Native American philosophy or wisdom, is the Universal Logos, but is not infinite. Only in the core of cores, which is always pure being, is the true infinity found. So the Great Spirit, the Universal Logos, has willfully, and when I'm talking about that spirit, I'm talking about you and you and I, has willfully limited its expression by means of emanation. We all know that a universe has many items within it. Those are all degrees of limited self-perception. An atom of matter is a limited self-perception of the universal logos. A universal logos, as there are an infinitude of them. A great galaxy is also a limited, willfully limited self-perception of the great perceiver, who is the universal logos, who is, finally, who is you and I. So all of these different magnitudes of things are projected self-divisions. In other words, the great being, and I'm staying in universe now, decides to divide itself, apparently, while not remaining divided. That's the, what should we say, the paradox. If there is one great candle, I've often used this, and it lights two more candles, which light two more candles, the original candle does not go out. We'll put aside the idea that it has to have fuel. Maybe being itself, which is endless and ever present, is the fuel. But division has occurred, and yet the original remains. So what I have to say is that somewhere, if I can use crude terms, somewhere at the top of the universe, the top of that universal pyramid, you and I, as one being, exist right now and for the duration of this particular universe. We are not only the divisions we have decided to make of our holistic self, we are the whole thing, which apparently has become subdivided by an act of our will, and yet no real division exists. It's simply an illusory self-perception. All of these descending divisions in lower and lower orders of magnitude are not ultimately real. They are myopic, as is the universe itself. So, how to put this in a way that is easy to say? We are the whole and also the part and also the parts. All of which are intentional self-divisions enacted through reduced self-perception. If I will to see less and less of the whole, I have created a part. Now, here comes a funny thought, strange. Are we more in our identity? Are we more this part than that part? In other words, each one of us has a vehicle here as a human being. But in our essential essence, are we more this vehicle with which we identify, usually, than we are other vehicles with which we do not usually identify? So, you know, the question is, as a part, am I as much you as I am a parent? Well, I'm just going to use the word me, even though grammatically it's less than correct. As a part, am I as much you as I am a parent me? See, my identity is the whole, in universe, logos. Well, it's a bit like the I am God statement. And then through willful self-division, self-reduction, I have become manifold emanations. So let's just say I, the whole, have become manifold self-divisions. There are so many self-divisions of different magnitude. And the paradoxical question am I more one of these divisions than another? Well, I know in the world of Maya and in the world of seeming, it seems so. It seems I have a name, an environment, certain abilities built up over time, blah, 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 and so do you, and we are different, apparently. But are we really different? Let's ponder on that for a minute. Are we really different in essence? And, you know, it's the kind of thing that Christ's level of identification could answer easily from an essential point of view, because he was so identified with essence. Of course, he was practical and he dealt with the myavic world and with good and with evil, as we must deal. But he knew the answer to that question. Are we really different? And I think that when there arises within us a certain form negating, boundary negating perception, which I call infusception, then we realize we are not different. So when infusception arises through extreme stillness, we realize that we are not different. In essence, from any other of the logoses, manifold emanations. And I really believe that about stillness. You know, the old saying, be still and know that I am God. Of what nature is the knowing? And who is the I who knows? And this is might also be called infusception, can be called non-qualificatory perception. Qualificatory, there's probably no such word, but non-qualificatory perception. If I am stopped in my perception by apparent quality, I may be able to function just fine in this world of Maya, but I will never know there is no difference. So, absorption in quality prevents me from knowing that essentially there is no difference. The whole any universe is really self-reflection, or the detail of any universe is really self-reflection. And there are some, you know, ancient philosophies, you'll find them, you know, when you work with Francis in his secret teaching of all the ages, analysis from Manly Hall, you'll find some of those images that show the great being reflected in water. It's like an image. Water is matter in this case. But it doesn't pre-exist the great being. It's an ability of the great universal being to turn perception upon itself, which creates the universe. So, I think I'll say that. The ability of the of the great universal being to turn consciousness upon itself produces what we call matter. Now, there have been all kinds of, you know, the human mind is very fallible, and there have been all kinds of philosophies, and some of them have been considered by the church to be heresies, you know, unacceptable forms of thought. During the Piscean Age, people were so afraid of thought that could mislead them from the goal of salvation, you know, and they called them heresies. And some of those heresies were the principle of good and evil exist side by side forever as great opposites. And I think that really is philosophically incorrect. The other day we talked about evil from that trance channeling of from Dr. Anna Kingsford that Blavatsky thought highly of, and it was a very different proposition. It was equated with limitation and not with the perpetual existence of two great opposite forces. I would say that a person who believed that would be caught in an intractable dualism. Nothing could be done. Dualism would continue to rule the consciousness. And basically, we want to have access to non-dual perception. We want access to non-dual perception, which we call infusception. And we have to practice it, of course. So I've probably said in this purple writing a lot of things that follow. Matter in universe is a condition of self-perception. Without self-perception of the universal logos, of itself, there is no matter. If universal self-perception ceases, matter ceases. Matter is perceptual. Is a perceptual artifact. It's not really real. And maybe the final pralaya of any universe is the cessation of the logos's self-perception. I'm going to put that as a possibility, you know. Maybe the final pralaya of any universe is the cessation, of self-perception by the universal logos. In other words, when the universal logos takes its consciousness away from itself, the universe ceases to be. Now, as I said, this is a sort of a psycho-perceptual view of the nature of the universe. There was a great English scientist who got into these things. He was knighted, I guess. His name was James Jeans, J-E-A-N-S, something of that nature. And he said, the further you go in your examination of reality, the more the universe begins to look like a great thought. And nothing external. I guess what I'm saying here, I am saying that externality or true externality does not exist. Oops, sorry. It is all happening, so to speak, within us, within ourselves, within the one universal self. Let's ponder on that for a moment. It's not happening to anyone else. Sometimes this kind of solipsism, is what they call it, is considered illusory. I think to the really deep thinker, solipsism, that there is oneself and all happenings are within that self, of that self, relates the greatest wisdom. And of course, for an individual who has that attitude, there is a profound identification going on all the time. You know, we might say for the individual who has this approach, where are the others? Now, you know, this is not the same as narcissism. Narcissism is terribly limited. You're just looking at one tiny little emanation and mistaking it for the whole when you are a narcissist. And we've seen plenty of narcissism lately. We know what we mean here. But when we extend our identity, how far do you extend? When we extend our identity and it covers everything, it's the opposite of narcissism. There's nothing and no one with which one fails to identify. And then it takes us back to the second ray mantra. Naught is but me. So what we're trying to do is avoid entrapment in the image. There's a way to behold all the tiny images, and every image really is tiny by comparison to the unending vastness, we can avoid entrapment. We can avoid entrapment in self-projected images, which we call beings of various kinds. We're not never be entrapped by the form. Essence calls to us, and our essence, which is the same, responds. And that's a different way of living. And a happier way of living, I think. More joyful, you know, the spirit wants to be itself and does not want to be captured by that which has come out of it through willful self-division, self-reduction. And that comes closer to the bliss of spirit. So, I've said this before, all varieties of matter are emanatively reduced self-perceptions. And they are, I just want to say, deliberately self-reduced. I think, you know, the subject is one that you can approach in many ways. And with many different kinds of words, you can approach it. And this would be the end of reading. Well, not really reading, but slow reflection, number 26. That's a pound sign, series 4. And I'll straighten that out if I can. Nope. Oh, that's because it's in English. Okay. Two keyboards, you know. Right. I could tell now that there are some responses because I think in chat some things are showing up. Before we get into that, I just want to say that we have to repeat these ideas until they have an impact and a different kind of reality begins to dawn on our consciousness. We need to make the transition from all those nice words we've heard through years and years of reading and discussion into actual change of perception. And it can be done if the concentration and the stillness the non-movement from apparent thing to apparent thing, if all that is established, we begin to get the infusception. Now, you know, I can't say that it is going to be the infusception that a great logos has, but it'll be a step in that direction, and it's an important step on the path of return. And, you know, the ongoing question, the ongoing question is there, that's Finnish. I got to change back to English. Question. Okay. Is there really a difference? That's the question. And that has to be practiced, if you will. Otherwise, you will live out your incarnation under the spell of unrelieved differentiation. Now, it may not sound like such a bad fate after all, but there is also something else. And it is a form of illusion to live always in unrelieved differentiation. I know I'm using, you know, kind of certain abstract terms, certain philosophical terms that are away from the practicalities of the moment, but just imagine that all of our many problems were somehow solved, and that life on Earth were much more agreeable, harmonious, much more unified. Then what would we pursue? And would we not really, finally, have to pursue the underlying reality? I think we would. I think we would have to pursue that. And so we're just getting a little bit of a head start. Okay. Now, if there are thoughts, questions, etc.
And yes, there are a number of comments and questions in the chat box, beginning with Frederick. Could we consider different layers of self-perception? If yes, we could consider a gap between early awareness of the self-perception as object and human actor, and higher quality of understanding of self-perception as inner or soul.
In general, I would say yes, there are these different strata. Now, you know, what really is, we know about our objective perception and our ordinary estimation of what we think the world is and what we are. Probably very few of us live always in the perception of the soul. And even that perception still involves multiplicity. So I believe that there are all these strata And they climb and climb and climb through points of tension until we have non-multiplicity, the perception of non-multiplicity. And our next objective, as you are saying here, is that quality of understanding which comes when we are focused within the causal body, and it is a higher form of self-perception, but still multiple. That's the point. See, I realize that in the attempt to do away with multiplicity here, even if just for a little while, every week or so, or every 2 weeks, that it's kind of going against the grain of how we think we normally grow. We will grow through soul, through triadal perception, through monadic awareness, and beyond. And all of those types of perception will be of an ever more unified multiplicity. See if maybe I can, perception of an ever more unified multiplicity is still not non-differential perception, but it is on its way. Multiplicity. Whoop. Multiplicity. Okay. So, you know, practically speaking, for all of us, our next goal is to live at that point of tension which is within the egoic lotus, within the causal body, continuously, consciously. And but it's still, you know, it's still part of a more unified, though multiple, self-perception. And we will continue to rise in points of tension as we become initiated. And the multiplicity will be there for still some time. But so will a growing sense of unification until the day comes when we finally overcome multiplicity, which is, you know, it's the problem of the one and the many again, over and over again. The many and the one. The many, the multiple, the differentiated. We will overcome those. But right now, our normal perception is engrossed with multiplicity. And we have to learn to move through that and beyond that on our way to non-multiple perception. So, we are on our way to non-multiple perception, or maybe I should even call it self-perception. But then you look around and the question comes, are there any others? Really? Otherness is a strange concept when dealing with being. Than essence, than being, there is no other. Finally. So we're on our way, and the steps that you are suggesting exist, I think. And when you talk about a word like gap, it immediately suggests the Antikarana, which, if completed to some degree, is going to unify those different points of tension so that they do not seem so foreign to us. Right now, I'm afraid we're all starting at a fairly primitive state, but the unification is growing. And eventually, out of unification of multiplicity will come the synthesis of the one. That is what will emerge for us, and really it just means reemerge, because we've been doing this forever, as far as I can see. Okay, Frederick, I hope that hits a few points anyway.
Okay, and here's another from Frederick. Could we consider the existence of self-division in our personality, part of feelings, and part of attitudes?
Well, I mean, the personality is absolutely filled with self-division, and the psychologist is differentiating all these different interactive energies and forces and tendencies. So that type of self-division we are familiar with. And so, you know, some will be feelings, thoughts, attitudes, old, forgotten memories. All of these different manifold points connected with each one of the vehicles. It's nothing but differentiation. But as we achieve a growing unification, because we can bring down an infusion from the soul, then all of that self-division, which is oftentimes so troublesome, DK calls it internecine warfare within the personality itself, internecine warfare, then all of those frictions really begin to harmonize, and it starts to act in a harmonious and more unified manner under the influence of the infusing soul. I guess, you know, when I'm talking about self-division, I'm talking about the one universal self, which we are, and which through self-division has created all emanation, all objectification. Basically, the manifold universe has been created through deliberate self-division of the very greatest universal being. So I'm not so much talking about the realm of psychology, but in the realm of psychology, I would say that what you are saying does apply. And we can, and all the time we are considering this self-division into which we seem to be born after many, many lives, and we are born into friction and conflict based upon the non-integration of our various parts, which we finally begin to solve in a spiritual manner under the impulse of the soul. Okay.
And next, Roz asks, if we are part and parts of the whole, then we are not different?
Yeah, that's what Roz been trying to drive at. Fundamentally, there is only apparent difference. And if, you know, difference is a form, and reality presents a picture of identicality in essence. Right, we are not different. And you cannot trace anything called yourself back to a previous universe, nor will it appear in a future universe. There's just one identity, one being, who is a projection into objectivity or finiteness of the transcendental deity above the universe, supra universal deity. Yes, no difference, but not from the practical angle. From the practical angle, difference everywhere. And we have to adjust that into a state of archetypal harmony. From the realistic, you know, and there I'm using it in a special way, from the realistic point of view, we are all essence, and between us and every other object, there is no difference. Naught is but me. That's the second ray mantra of those seven mantras.
And Martine responded to that, in essence, we are not different than the Christ.
Yes, and than any other being. The Christ for us is the supremely developed member of our particular creative hierarchy, the initiates. But, Christ's statement, when his disciples referred to him as good, you remember that, why call you me good? Only God is good. So the Christ himself, as much as he means to us, is minuscule in the scheme of things. Our planetary logos is minuscule. Our solar logos is minuscule. Every being in the universe is minuscule when compared with the supra-universal transcendental deity. But yes, the essence is the same. And he also said, greater things shall ye do than I now do. So he could look ahead and see what was possible in every human being. The essence is the same. If we get, nothing else, true essence is being, and than being there is no other. Than being there is no other. Being has no other. And that is the essence of the Christ, of us, and of all things, being. And it involves removing a lot of attention, temporarily, removing a lot of attention to form and to quality. And how to ignore quality for a little while, as we struggle to come en rapport with essence. Everyone's going to have to find their own way. But in a way, this ability to ignore form, only temporarily, of course, when you're in that kind of search mode, is very important. And I've said it's related to the heart center and maybe to the series of heart centers that we have. Somehow, stillness and the activation of the heart helps us ignore the differentiations of form and find, through infusception, only being. And that's what we're trying to do, to find only being when we will to find only being.
And then Frederick asks, if we consider that only self-conscious, ate as I, can infusive, how can we define the non-qualificatory perception process in universe?
Because that eight is the whole perceiver. That eight really is the universal logos. In other words, when we begin to do that, we are rising along the line which will give us complete universal self-perception eventually. It will restore that kind of holistic self-perception. The eight, which I say is I, really is the universal logos ultimately. And even now, and this is the paradox, even now, every one of us and every being is resident at the top of the universe, you know, to use terms which really, well, they're inadequate, but we are there now, as well as in every other place, and as well as in every being, including this being form with which we most identify. So basically speaking, the eight that I use is the extension of the universal logos. It is the I-ness of the universal logos at whatever level of immersion we may find it. It goes deeper and deeper into self-reduction, and hence its scope seems more and more limited. But as a human being, when we get hold of that eight, which is, you know, like the ability to reach the top and then descend again and ascend, when we get hold of that, we're on our way to rediscovering that we never left home, and that the universal logos, you know, in universe, is perceiving holistically even now, and so are we, as well as perceiving in a limited and reduced manner. I have a whole chain of eyes somewhere, you know, eyes, 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 eye, all of them representing degrees of self-reduction. Let's see. Like that. Or maybe 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. No. Let's see what 4 looks like. Well, I guess this is it. And I have something further there as well. But it shows how we descend from our topmost identity, but never lose that topmost identity at any point, just like the candle. The chief candle doesn't go out, even though multiple candles derive from it. We are already there. We are perceiving holistically, even now and throughout the duration of the universe, any universe. And at the same time, we are limited by that intentional reduction of scope that we have forced upon ourselves. And of course, when you start to say, well, why all this? Why all this? It gets a little bit complicated. It's certainly not that we have to create anything new, because all possibility is resident within the universal, within the trans-universal logos. So, as I've said before, when I said, well, look, you know, the real you is not improving, I've lost friends over over that statement. But the relative you is improving within the context of any universe all the time. So thank you. You know, these are deep questions, and unless I've never satisfied with how I answer such questions to myself or to you, you know, to anyone. I'm always looking for a sharper response, which somehow captures more of the truth. After all, we have these humble things which DK is always decrying, and they are called words. And here we are, you know, trying to get the connotation of certain words to help bridge us into a new state of realization. And I find it difficult. But see, maybe we'll take up next time. I meant to this time. How far do we really extend? You know, are we extensive throughout the universe? In a way, yes. Are we totally superimposed and non-extensive? Is there time, is there space outside of universe or above and beyond universe? How extensive are we? Or is our extensiveness simply an illusion due to the kind of categories of mind that Kant talked about, categories of perception which reveal a world to us which is in which we have to work and live, but which is not real? I might say, how far do I go? Where is my ring pass not? Does my ring pass not have a boundary? Is there a condition in which my ring pass not does not have a boundary? Is there a condition in which it does? How far does that boundary go? Or if I begin to talk about boundaries, am I in the realm of Maya altogether when compared with something more real in our discussion, which would eliminate boundaries? Remember, the ultimate reality, in one way of describing it, in the Secret Doctrine with Fundamental One, is the boundless, boundless, immutable principle. The BIP, the boundless, immutable principle. Now, well, I'll get into it next time, but if it's boundless, there's just no movement, and there's no change, because it's immutable. And that sets up the first great contradiction between the first fundamental of the Secret Doctrine and the second fundamental. And for the time being, we're going to have to live in this paradoxical world that maybe can be summarized by the statement, We are the whole and we are the part. And not only are we the part, we're every part of the whole. And every one of those parts is unreal, though actual, and is an act of will on our part, act of will, because we have decided upon self-division to create the manifold universe. Now, does it do any good to carry around these thoughts with one? Well, I persist in the idea that if this state of identification has continuity, then we're going to live better in the spiritual sense, and better, and more blissfully in the spiritual sense, which does not mean that we will become totally impractical. It doesn't mean that at all. And the masters have shown that it's possible to be blissful in the sense of being the one, and practical in the sense of being able to handle the many.
And then Frederick adds, it is a long process as an ongoing inner awareness about this knowledge from ourself.
Yeah, I agree. As time goes, it's a long process, and our view of what self is always changing. Right now, we have a very mistaken and, for the most part, very approximate estimation of what self is, and we're going to, through initiation, grow into a better and better estimation of what self is, and we will find ourselves transcending our customary ring pass knot. And that of course will be quite an experience, and another step on the path to release into our full spirit nature. So yes, as time goes, and it goes forever, illusorily forever, it's a long time. But we can make head. We can make progress now, even now. Okay, is that it then, Michael?
There are no hands raised, and that is all that is written in the chat box at this point.
Okay, so I'm going to say that we should take this up on the 17th of December, when apparently we meet again. Now, I just want to say, we're heading into Christmas. We're heading into the solstice. Now, 12 years of the Moria Federation have elapsed. We'll be having meditations about that. There will be a lot of meditations, and we'll be heading towards our Christmas programming and our New Year's vigil. And so, you know, I'm not the best programmer here. I'm surrounded by people who are much more organized on these matters than I am. But stay tuned for changes in the customary programming because of the kind of season that it is now. And I think, you know, every once in a while we have to have a little break from the customary anyway, and the Christmas time, the solstice time, the New Year's time, they're all so important in giving us a fresh impulse toward the good and the beautiful and the true. So thank you, everybody, and let's just close. Yeah. Yeah, Martine says, thank you to all and one. Yes, all in one. Exactly so. Exactly. I appreciate your thoughts. Thanks, Cindy. Okay, and let's close with the great invocation. There's that. Right.
Would you like to change your screen share?
I'd be crazy to. There we go. Thank you. That's in case we have forgotten this invocation. Maybe, I don't know if it's ever happened to you, I'm leading the invocation and I discover I left the verse out of it, you know, or somehow forgot something. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Thank you, everyone. Tonight, 6 p.m. GMT, we'll be having the reappearance of the Christ meditation broadcast at the usual YouTube broadcast that we've been using for so long. And then we'll have our USA vigil, as we must remain vigilant, and that will be at 8 p.m. GMT tonight. So lots of love, many blessings, and we'll be seeing you, okay, working with you. Bye-bye.